Today's episode is brought to you by Westholm. We all know, from home cooks to restaurant chefs to eating enthusiasts, that the quality of your ingredients makes all the difference, especially when it comes to meat.
Westholm, which is based in Queensland and the Northern Territory, Australia, is working with the land to create nature-led Australian Wagyu.
They steward 16 million acres of rangeland, guided by the natural ecosystem where their cattle thrive. The result is high-quality Wagyu beef that reflects the terroir of Northern Australia, and a flavor suited to complement any cuisine.
Westholm believes that when nature leads, flavor follows. Learn more at westholm.com/savor. That's westholme.com/savor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico is home to a thriving culinary scene based on products and traditions from the native Taíno, African, and Spanish peoples that have influenced it.
When you go, there are a host of restaurants, bars, breweries, distilleries, farms, and coffee houses to dig into, from five-star experiences to local favorites.
No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about Pan de Muerto.
Pan de Muerto. I had never heard of this.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I know. A lot of these episodes we've done around Dia de los Muertos, I have been woefully ignorant. So I was excited to learn about it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. It is super tasty, a favorite, like, seasonal holiday treat of mine. And we're lucky here in Atlanta to have a really wide group of different immigrants from around the world and a bunch of really great international markets. And I miss living up on Beaufort Highway, where I had, like, kind of immediate access to stuff like this.
Yes. I'm assuming that's why this was on your mind, is because...
Yes, because El Día de los Muertos was November 1st and 2nd, and so here we are.
Here we are. You can see our Marigold episode, where we did talk about some of the stuff that we're going to talk about in here.
Yeah, maybe kind of generally tortillas and... tamales.
Any kind of bread-related thing, I suppose.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess that brings us to our question.
I guess it does.
Pan de Muerto. What is it?
Well, pan de muerto is a type of rich, soft, yeast-raised sweet bread. It's made with a fluffy white wheat flour, dense with a lot of egg and milk and butter, sweetened with a little bit of granulated sugar in the dough and more sprinkled over the crust usually, and flavored warm and bright and floral with orange blossom water, and often a bit of orange zest, anise, and or cinnamon. It's shaped into round loaves or buns and decorated on top with these kind of bulbous ropes of dough that are meant to resemble crossed bones. And that is because it is a traditional treat surrounding El Día de los Muertos, which is a holiday celebrating loved ones who have died and which incorporates a lot of skeletal imagery. It literally means bread of the dead, pan de muertos, yes. And Día de los Muertos is Day of the Dead. Sure, totally. Here we go. Yes. So pan de muerto is, it's like a dessert brioche or challah that reminds you that death is part of life. Yeah. It's like, it is fragrant and comforting, like a warm, bright light in the dark, just welcoming you home.
Oh, I love that.
No.
It's beautiful.
I've seen a bunch of different recipes, a bunch of different like types of recipes for how to work the ingredients together. But basically, you're looking to make a really rich, fatty, moist dough with stuff like milk, butter, or lard, and eggs, either all whole eggs or maybe plus some extra yolks. You leaven it with friendly bread yeasts, which eat some of the sugars in the flour and poop carbon dioxide bubbles and flavors. Yeast poop. You let it rise, you punch it down, then shape your loaves and let them rise again before baking to a fluffy golden brown. Once they're out of the oven, you might glaze them with an egg or butter wash as a glue and then sprinkle on granulated sugar like glitter. Colored sugars are optional. Bright pink or red are popular depending on the area that you're in. And the shape is said to be symbolic, maybe symbolic of the mounded earth of a grave with like bones peeking up out of it, or maybe like the circle of life, or maybe the tears that we shed for the dead, or the tears that the dead shed for us. Yeah.
Ooh,
or mm-hmm. I'm not sure. Or maybe maybe red or pink represents the blood of the dead who died wounded. Other shapes can be made with the bread. You can make it into a donut shape or a doll shape or like a chubby little skeleton with slashes and pinches of dough for the arms and legs and head. In parts of Oaxaca, you might add an edible painted face or skull onto the finished bread. In other areas, motifs could involve flowers or animals, real or mythical. You might make it into the shape of a cross or an angel or braided bones. There are all kinds of variations, and especially in flavoring, like how much sugar do you use? Do you want just the orange blossom water? Is anise important to balance out the sweetness? Is orange zest what really makes it shine? Is cinnamon the warming element that you need? I mean, do you want to add chocolate chips? I cannot stop you, and I would not furthermore. If you want to add other herbs or spices like lavender or cardamom, maybe a filling or a stuffing of cream, chocolate, guava paste, goat milk caramel, rice pudding, flan, ice cream. I've seen it topped with sesame seeds or pumpkin seeds for like a less sweet, more savory kind of take. Or like going all in with like a sweet white chocolate or dark chocolate or like sticky bun glaze. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. And they're beautiful. Like they're a lot of them are really pretty to look at. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I've really only had like the very basic kind. But now I'm like, oh, okay, need to find and or create some of these variants. Another variant, it's not always wheat flour dough. Corn doughs can be used. And like these are a lot of examples, but it's honestly just scratching the surface. You know, like if there's one that is precious to you, please write in.
Yes, please write in.
Oh my goodness.
And send pictures if you have them.
Yes, yes. Recipes, yes. Mm-hmm. All right. Pan de Muerto is mostly served as like a snack surrounding El Día de los Muertos, maybe with like a nice hot coffee or a hot chocolate. They can also be incorporated into ofrendas, which are sort of shrines or altars to loved ones who have passed, and which furthermore incorporate those loved ones' favorite foods and drinks, along with, you know, like photos, some marigolds, you know, bright and fragrant orange yellow, some sugar skulls, some calaveras, which are skeletons usually that are like doing stuff, like, I don't know, like being a fireman or playing soccer. I'm not sure. Yeah, whatever they want to do. Candles, incense, other decor. Ofrendas are like meant to remind you of the deceased and what they loved in life and to welcome them back to celebrate with you. Pan de Muerto is traditionally made at home, but especially leading up to the holiday, you can find it in bakeries and from street vendors all around Mexico, where it is mostly from, and also other places where the holiday is celebrated and or where Mexican people have immigrated.
Yes. Well, what about the nutrition?
No, it depends, but it's probably a treat. Treats are nice.
Treats are nice.
Mm-hmm.
Treats are nice. We don't have much in the way for numbers for you, but we have one.
Yes.
One that I found. And I actually saw a lot of different versions of this number, so
okay.
Grain of salt. But Bakeries across Mexico prepare over 400 types of pan de muerto during El Día de los Muertos. So there's a lot of different types. And there are a lot of different, like, specific regional variations I found.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, totally. Yes. And right. That number was in Nat Geo. So I'm sure, why not?
Yeah. Most of them I found were less, and I'm inclined to believe there are more, actually. So,
oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. But to say, there are a lot of different numbers. But that brings us to the history.
Oh, yes. And we are going to get into that as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by Westholm. I'm a person who doesn't really cook with a lot of meat, to be honest, because when I do, I want it to be special.
I'm the same, and I do love sharing that food with people. And I have to say, we received some product, some steak, and I am very eager to share it with my friends.
Yeah, Westholm sent us a few of their products, and they included these gorgeous, gigantic tomahawk steaks that I, like, opened the box and immediately sent a picture to my best grilling friend, like, hang out soon.
Yes, I did too.
Westholm offers these beautifully marbled steaks because they have 16 million acres of rangeland across the northeast corner of Australia, from Brisbane to Darwin. They use a nature-led approach with the belief that if they balance the needs of their cattle with the needs of their environment, both can thrive.
Their cattle graze on native grasses like Mitchell grass, which is found only in Australia, and roam wild, foraging at will for the first 2 to 3 years of their lives.
The result is Wagyu beef that reflects the terroir of Northern Australia and a quality that would complement whatever you're into cooking right now.
Westholm believes that when nature leads, flavor follows. Learn more at westholm.com/savor. That's westholme.com/savor.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
Dad deserves something really nice for Father's Day, but let's face it, we usually don't do it. Big gifts are for Mother's Day. Picking something up on the way is for Father's Day. Well, let's make Father's Day something this year with the Bartesian Cocktail Maker. It whips up over 60 premium cocktails on demand, each ready at the push of a button. And right now, you get $50 off the Bartesian Cocktail Maker when you buy one pack of Dad's favorite cocktail capsules. Dad will publicly love that you saved $50 on the countertop machine that crafts premium cocktails on demand. And he'll secretly love that you splurged on him for Father's Day with the gift of a Bartesian. Because the only thing that lets Dad know he's the world's number one dad better than a world's number one dad coffee mug is an artisan cocktail in his hand. Make Dad's Father's Day and Father's Day cocktails with all natural juices and bitters without making any mess at all. Visit bartesian.com/father to get $50 off the best premium cocktail maker for Dad at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with a not-so-fun disclaimer.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
But yes, a lot of the language in resources I found around this topic was / is, because some of them were pretty recent, pretty offensive, and also very skewed, which we're going to talk about in this section. That being said, a lot of sources claim that this bread traces back to the arrival of Spanish colonizers to what is now Mexico and surrounding areas in the 1500s.
Yes. Okay. So when the Spanish showed up, the group in power was perhaps what's least confusingly known as the Triple Alliance, often called the Aztec Empire. Aztec is actually a more modern term that got retroactively applied, and it's been applied unevenly to different peoples. So, yes, I'm going to stick with the Triple Alliance, referring to the empire made up of these three city-states in what's now known as the Valley of Mexico. Okay? Okay. Although there were a blend of peoples and traditions in the area, one of the big community festivals at the time was this month-long celebration of the dead, which happened in the ninth month of their calendar, right around like late July, early August, aka harvest season. And various pieces of this tradition stretch back like 3,000 years. But by this point, a large part of it involved honoring a goddess known as the Lady of the Dead and the Keeper of the Underworld, Mictlantecuhtli. Ooh, my Nahuatl is not good. I apologize. I'm making efforts. But she and her husband were portrayed as having these skeletal faces and as wearing necklaces of skulls and severed hands. And there was dance and offerings and food all month long. And, you know, humans like bread. It's almost certain that some kind of bread-type product was part of these traditions. There were definitely bread-type offerings made to other gods, like the Tenochtitlan, patron god of the sun and of war, and also to spirits of the dead, like those of women who had died in childbirth, perhaps especially their first childbirth. However, okay, a few things. Wheat did not exist in the area until colonization. Any bread offerings at the time would have been flatbreads, including tortillas or tamales made with amaranth or corn. Granulated sugar had not reached the area either. Honey might have been used as a sweetener. The Spanish were also the ones who brought oranges, though those did catch on like particularly fast in the area. But okay, so yes, that is the type of bread that we would have been dealing with. Meanwhile, symbols used for decorations of ritual breads sometimes included butterflies, which are a fall seasonal thing in the area because monarch butterflies migrate south for the winter from like all the way up through what's now Canada every fall. So some cultures, especially up in the mountain forest areas of that part of the world, have associated the return of the monarchs with the harvest season and with the return of spirits of the dead. You can still find a few butterfly symbols floating around today. So yes, offerings of breads were a thing. Pan de Muertos, or any like direct corollary to it, was probably not a thing when the Spanish arrived. I say probably because part of the problem in sussing out the like pre-Hispanic history of traditions in this area is that a lot of what has been told about it, like up until very recently, has been super biased Spanish colonist tellings or straight up retcons of that history, which they basically did as an excuse to take over. Like, researchers are still uncovering writings and artifacts and, like, figuring out what was really going on before and when the Spanish showed up.
Right. And when the Spanish showed up, they immediately set about enforcing Christianity and erasing and or changing the traditions, beliefs, and culture.
One of the things that they did was they looked at this seasonal fall festival and went, well, this isn't going to do. So they tried to like reshape and refit its traditions into existing Catholic holidays. For example, All Saints Day and All Souls Day, which occur on November 1st and November 2nd. All Saints Day remembers and honors saints who are now in heaven, and All Souls Day is the time to pray for souls of loved ones who might be trapped in purgatory, awaiting entrance into heaven.
And Pan de Muertos was part of all of this.
Yeah. There are pretty popularly told, I would call them myths, that Pan de Muertos was created as a substitution for barbaric rituals.
Yeah, that it represented the still beating hearts and blood of virgins, or in some accounts, a specific princess, as mentioned, sacrificed to pagan gods. And in some sources, it was blood mixed with dough in this whole thing. The myths say that traditionally used ingredients like amaranth changed to wheat because the Spanish pushed wheat making. The bread was further sweetened with sugar that the Spanish brought. Red coloring was added to represent blood, and that the shape changed too, though not in all cases. And it was commercialized. But notably, indigenous people fought to protect the tradition celebrating and remembering the dead and this bread.
Yeah. And like, okay, look, upper class priests in the Triple Alliance did certainly promote and enact human sacrifice, especially during a certain period of their power. And those sacrifices were culturally important. But like, if you just think about it, like, obviously, that wasn't a huge part of daily life for everybody. Like, it wouldn't have been, you know, like, woo, princess hearts all around, let's go. Like, every holiday, you wouldn't have just been munching on princess hearts. Like, and obviously not to the point that, like, the common dude down the street would need to be placated when you took away his princess heart with a symbolic heart bread. You know, like, these were communities of artisans and scholars and farmers and yes, fighters and priests, but these peoples were people. And reducing their cultures to, ooh, human sacrifice is silly. Like, it's missing out on everything else that they have to offer the world. Yeah. That's Lauren's Killjoy Corner. also, a book that I have not read, but I read a great interview with the author about, and I want to get a hold of a copy, is called Fifth Son, A New History of the Aztecs. And that author is one Camilla Townsend. It seems like it's digging into a lot of scholarly work, writings from people of the time and, you know, kind of trying to, put together a more realistic and more rounded view of what these peoples were up to.
Yes. Which is very important. And I would like to read that too. But as you said, the Spanish were celebrating at this time, All Souls Day and All Saints Day. And that goes back as far as the 10th century CE in Europe, at least. And they celebrated it with pan de animas, or soul bread, which was an offering on those days that was given to honor past loved ones. Past loved ones, lost loved ones. So in some accounts, they basically use this bread and tradition to overtake, erase, combine with whatever offerings were being made in order to come up with pan de muertos. I also read an interesting interview with someone else that he was making the argument that it might have been a bit of a metaphor that got lost.
Okay,
so that in pan de muertos, you're essentially symbolically eating the dead. And the Spanish were not on board with what they called cannibalism. And the cannibalism of the symbol, I should say. But when I read that, I was like, but like Christianity, and in particular Catholicism, has that whole body and blood of Christ. I don't know.
Catholics are so heckin' goth. It's like, all right, yes. That I
body and the blood, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, at any rate, yes, cemetery vigils and ofrendas were also part of Spanish celebrations of All Saints and All Souls Days. So but okay, however all of this got started, communities in what's now Mexico adopted a blend of indigenous and Spanish and other European practices. And over the centuries, that blend morphed into the holiday and the bread that we have today. During the 1700s, rulers in New Spain actually tried to outlaw cemetery festivities. And so during that, and they were like, this is too raucous. You guys are going too hard. You're celebrating too much. It's getting dangerous. So during that point and other points, like during the Mexican-American social movement of the 1960s, symbolic traditions like ofrendas and pan de muerto have been forms of resistance.
In 2010, jumping way ahead, UNESCO declared it an intangible cultural heritage of humanity.
Mm-hmm. Or not pan de muertos specifically, but Mexican cuisine in general, including Day of the Dead symbolic foods. And El Día de los Muertos, more generally, was added to their list in 2008 as well.
And yeah, the pandemic really hit El Día de los Muertos celebrations pretty hard, mm-hmm. Since they're often communal, or a lot of aspects of them certainly are. I found articles from folks who, in absence of the public celebration part, made sure to get pan de muertos. Still, it inevitably impacted traditional bakers as well.
Oh, sure.
Also, as discussed in our Marigolds episode, thanks to things like the 2017 film Coco, I laugh because it comes up in every article, that's all.
It does.
It really does. About El Día de los Muertos, Latinx communities, and especially younger folks in the community, have been reclaiming or even celebrating for the first time, especially outside of Mexico. Feeling like, okay, I would like to explore this. I would like to reconnect with this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I found a good quote I wanted to end with from Adriana Velez at the Washington Post in 2020. Quote, "For me, crafting this bread by hand is an embodied meditation. Through its very corporeal motions, I reflect on all the mythologies around the world of gods creating humans, of how they take substances from the earth and animate them, using nothing more than their bare hands. As I knead, I am aware of my breath, my body, and I am a god using the alchemy of seeds, water, and motions to create life. When the dough rises, I admire my creation, filled as it is with spirits. I conquer death, if only for today, and I connect with my ancestors who help me see past this momentary crisis. I feel the generations before and the generations to come. I cross dimensions of time and space. My ancestors have seen war, genocide, bondage, heartbreak, and yet here I am, their descendant, working dough in their honor for now. For those we lost this year, for those who will rise up in the future."
Yeah.
That's so good.
That's pretty perfect. That's really lovely.
It is. It really is. It's a great article.
Yeah.
I suggest seeking it out. But yeah, listeners, we would love to hear from you about this. Recipes,
oh,
history, pictures, recommendations.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, heck. Yeah. If you've got a favorite bakery, if there's any other holiday foods that are really important to you or that you add to an ofrenda for somebody who's passed, who you love, yeah, let us know.
Yes, please let us know. But in the meantime, that's what we have to say for now.
It is. We do already have some listener mail for you, though, and we are going to get into that as soon as we get back from one more quick break for a word from our sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by Westholm. I'm a person who doesn't really cook with a lot of meat, to be honest, because when I do, I want it to be special.
I'm the same, and I do love sharing that food with people. And I have to say, we received some product, some steak,
mm-hmm.
and I am very eager to share it with my friends.
Yeah, Westholm sent us a few of their products, and they included these gorgeous, gigantic tomahawk steaks that I, like, opened the box and immediately sent a picture to my best grilling friend, like, hang out soon.
Yes, I did too.
Westholm offers these beautifully marbled steaks because they have 16 million acres of rangeland across the northeast corner of Australia, from Brisbane to Darwin. They use a nature-led approach with the belief that if they balance the needs of their cattle with the needs of their environment, both can thrive.
Their cattle graze on native grasses like Mitchell grass, which is found only in Australia, and roam wild, foraging at will for the first 2 to 3 years of their lives.
The result is Wagyu beef that reflects the terroir of Northern Australia and a quality that would complement whatever you're into cooking right now.
Westholm believes that when nature leads, flavor follows. Learn more at westholm.com/savor. That's westholme.com/savor.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing WatsonX Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with WatsonX Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
Dad deserves something really nice for Father's Day, but let's face it, we usually don't do it. Big gifts are for Mother's Day. Picking something up on the way is for Father's Day. Well, let's make Father's Day something this year with the Bartesian Cocktail Maker. It whips up over 60 premium cocktails on demand, each ready at the push of a button. And right now, you get $50 off the Bartesian Cocktail Maker when you buy one pack of Dad's favorite cocktail capsules. Dad will publicly love that you saved $50 on the countertop machine that crafts premium cocktails on demand. And he'll secretly love that you splurged on him for Father's Day with the gift of a Bartesian. Because the only thing that lets Dad know he's the world's number one dad better than a world's number one dad coffee mug is an artisan cocktail in his hand. Make Dad's Father's Day and Father's Day cocktails with all natural juices and bitters without making any mess at all. Visit bartesian.com/father to get $50 off the best premium cocktail maker for Dad at the best price for you. Bartesian. Premium cocktails on demand.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with listener mail. Like a light in the dark.
Aww.
A hug.
Yeah.
It is a little chilly in Atlanta right now.
It is. My toes are cold. It's fine.
My toes are too. And I'm wearing socks.
Same.
So we got a message from what the email subject line indicates. Name is Stephen.
Okay.
Name is Stephen, mysterious. But at the bottom signed, a very pleased kefir witch. So,
we don't know,
but mm-hmm. there you go. Mm-hmm. Whoever it was, thanks for writing in. They wrote, after years of listening, waiting, and not even considering requesting it, you've done an episode on one of my special interests, kefir. I literally audibly gasped when I saw the episode title. My kefir journey began in childhood when my aunt used to make it using goat milk from her personal team of goats. Since I was a snooty child, I thought it was gross. Though fascinating, and refused to drink it. Cut to my mid-20s, and I ordered my own grains online and enjoyed many of my own homemade kefir creations. Hmm. There are too many for me to list, but some highlights were lazy kefir sourdough bread and kefir sodas, which are made from the whey that you drain from the finished product. The bonus of draining the whey is that the milk solid product that's left has the consistency of Greek yogurt and can be used as such in snacking and recipes. Sadly, I threw out my grains when I started nursing school and my life got too hectic, but I will order them again when the weather cools more thoroughly here in the West and the grains are more likely to survive the journey.
Oh.
Oh, there's so much to love here.
Yes. Yes. Also,
team of goats,
teams of goats, kefir witchery,
yes,
lazy sourdough bread, yeah,
yes,
yeah,
yes,
kefir sodas, heck,
mm-hmm. I love it. I hope you write back in and let us know more about your grains if they make it.
Yeah,
a little follow up would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us all about any time that anyone has a microbial community that they want to let us know about. Please do.
Please do.
Andrew wrote, long, long time. I am an episode or two behind, but your Kolch episode inspired me to write in. There's a local brewery here in Indianapolis, a beer brewery, which does a once weekly, let's have more than enough, Kolch service. Alas, it's on Monday evening, so I've never gotten to participate, but I might just give it a go next time I have a Tuesday off of work. This brewery also does the best pumpkin ale around. As a much too experienced pumpkin beer drinker, I really do mean it when I say it's autumn in a glass. Y'all done a pumpkin beer episode? My favorite local place also does a Citra-hopped Kolch named the Sammy Terry after a spooky regional TV host from years past. It's a great one for sitting on the porch and tossing a ball with our three dogs. Bonus fact, the joint I'm referring to is a lovely, kitschy, horror-themed brewery. Ooh. And half the space has now been converted into a Sammy Terry-dedicated dungeon for October. Bonus fact, this is the same brewery that made a dill kolch in support of Ukraine back in the early days of the ongoing conflict there. Another beer-related tidbit goes back to your soba episode. Another small place here does a soba ale brewed with buckwheat. The beer is fine, so I'm including this more because the brewery seems right up your alley. Books and Brews is a tap room in the back and used bookshop / tabletop game center / Funko Pop boutique in the front. It's one of the few places here where reading and quietly enjoying a brew is actually acceptable. Definitely worth a visit. P.S. Indy was just recently voted one of the top beer cities in the country by USA Today. If you ever make it to Gen Con, you'll have plenty of excellent spots to try. P.P.S. Since I brought up dill above, I have one last fun dill story to share. My wife's late grandmother would often bring a dill-flavored dip to family gatherings. The ubiquitous dip became simply known as Granny Dip. After Granny's passing several years ago, the recipe was willed to a cousin, who then gifted it to us for our wedding. Anytime either of our families are getting together, my wife will offer to make the dip, and my answer is 100% yes.
Oh, Granny Dip.
That willed. Is willed. The recipe was willed to a cousin and then gifted on the occasion of a wedding. This is so cool.
That is so awesome. I want like a Game of Thrones level like production of this. Who will get
wonderful.
The Granny Dip recipe?
Right? So much better than the red or purple wedding gifts. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Also, yeah, all these breweries sound amazing.
Yeah.
Haunted Brewery, Book Brewery, Soba Buckwheat Beer.
Yeah. I would be in so much trouble if we had a combo used bookstore and bar of any kind. I would be like half a beer in, and I would be like, I'm buying everything here. Literally yes. Everything. Uh-huh.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would be even worse if it was kind of like haunted themed. Then I'm never leaving.
Oh, heck. Also, I do love a really a regional TV host situation.
Yes.
And Sammy Terry sounds wonderful. Just delightful.
I love that too. I love that the level he has reached. That's fantastic. Oh, so good. Well, maybe one day, Lauren.
Yeah. Yeah. Adding it to our list of places to go.
Yes. Our ever-growing list. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, in the meantime, thanks to both of these listeners for writing in. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We are also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod. And we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
I'm going out with the girls this weekend. Nails done. Outfit stunner. And my skin? I know it's going to be glowing because I glammed up my shower routine with new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash. It smells so luxurious and deeply moisturizes with its super rich, creamy lather that's bursting with vitamin B3 complex. So my skin glows and my confidence grows. Try new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash for glowing skin in just 14 days.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit tomboyx.com.